You're listening to a podcast service of Ecclesia Baptist Church in Fairview, North Carolina. You can visit us on the web at www.ecclesiabaptist.org.
It's a bit sad, but we are coming to the end of this particular section series on parables. And I know that we've only covered really a few of them, about six or seven. But I'm hoping that those have kind of sparked your interest and you said, I want to read some more about that. I want to dig into those parables a little bit more. But this week, as we move from into next, as of Wednesday, into the season of Lent, we're going to be looking at some of Jesus' examples of miracles, teaching on miracles and the way he embodied miracles in his ministry and what they tell us about the kingdom. So we've said over the past few weeks that these parables are windows to the kingdom. That they're, Jesus is giving us these little glimpses of kingdom life and what is it really like. And we said over this time, though, they cause us to kind of pause and to ask some questions and to think hard about what Jesus is saying, because they often contain elements that are baffling or confusing or bring up more questions than answers. It is entirely possible that some of us will hear this parable this week as kind of the antidote to last week's parable, the opposite in some ways. Last week, we looked at the parable of the laborers in the vineyard, and we said, you know, depending on people were hired throughout the day, early in the morning, midday, afternoon, right before quitting time, and then all of them get paid the same. And we're like, wow, where's the justice in that? Where's the fairness in that? Where's the equality in that? And then today we look at this parable where it seems to suggest that you get a just reward for your effort. It's kind of almost maybe an endorsement of capitalism, it seems like. Those who work hard and invest wisely get rewarded. And those who are lazy lose even the little bit that they have. But is that really what this parable's about? Let's take a look at what's going on here. Parable starts out with this man going on a journey, and we don't know exactly what kind of a journey it is, what exactly is going on, but we can surmise that he is a wealthy man, both by the fact that he has servants and the amount of money that he entrusts to those servants. So if you remember back a few weeks ago, we looked at the parable of the unmerciful servant, and we talked about how he was forgiven his debt of 10,000 talents. And we were kind of doing the math on the talents and saying it was probably about $3 billion. In, you know, today's economy, more or less, maybe more than that. But we said that a talent is equivalent to 20 years' wages for the average worker. Therefore, the equivalent wage based on the current U.S. federal minimum wage, mind you, would make a talent worth somewhere around $300,000. Could have actually probably been more than that, but we're just going to go minimum wage. That kind of gives us at least something to work with. So imagine this wealthy business guy. He comes to his servants, to his workers, and he says, "All right, folks, I'm going on a journey. I will be back eventually. Here's some money that I'm going to entrust you with until I get back to you. I'm going to give a small sum of $1.5 million, five talents." Have fun with that, Sean. Sean's like, bring it on. "And to you, the next one, David, we're going to give you, you know, somewhere in that sum, $600,000. You know, you use that as you will. To Brian, $300,000, according to your abilities." No personal connections there necessarily. But the point being, this guy is giving them a lot of money. This is not a small sum. You know, one talent is a lot of money still. And then, so when the guy comes back, he gathers together servants and he says, "We got to, you know, settle accounts." And so one servant says, "You know, took my five talents, my, you know, $1.5 million or whatever, and I doubled it. Here you go." He says, "Good work." Second one, "Here's my $600,000-ish. I've got now $1.2 million. Wow, good job." Right? And then the other guy's like, "Hey, dude," Brian was like, "I was so scared I was going to lose it. And that, it, you know, so I just buried it. And here's your money back," right? And the master freaks out, right? And he has a fit and he punishes the third servant for not doing anything with it. If you look at that, the reality is he didn't really do anything wrong, right? I mean, in the sense of he gave the guy back exactly what was his. I mean, he didn't steal his money. He didn't go gamble it away and say, well, you know, I got nothing for you, sorry. I mean, he said, look, okay, you gave me some money. I took care of it. I didn't lose it. Here it is. You haven't lost anything. But it makes you think that maybe the money itself wasn't really the point after all. At least not what Jesus was trying to get at. It was what you do with it. What have you done with it? It's important for us to look at this parable in its context. And I've said this before. I say it to my students all the time at school. That if you ever take a text out of context, all you're left with is a con. There's some truth to that. It's a little silly, but there's some truth to that. So, what's the context that's going on here? Matthew 24 and 25, Jesus has been teaching throughout these two chapters on his return, the second coming. This is one of the few places where Jesus actually talks about the end times or the second coming. And he says, look, when it comes about, there will be a judgment. Things will happen. But here's some signs. This is what's going to happen before we get there. There will be false prophets. There will be wars. There will be rumors of war. There will be natural disasters, earthquakes, famines, those kind of things. He says, these are going to come. He says, when the second coming actually happens, there will be these cosmic signs, you know, the sun ceasing to shine and so forth. There will be persecution. He's giving these descriptions. And then he says, now look, let me tell you a couple stories to illustrate my point, what I'm trying to say to you. And so he tells this story about these 10 virgins. And so they're waiting for the bridegroom to come. And five of them are prepared and five of them are not. And five of them miss it when he shows, when the groom shows up. Then he tells this story about these talents. Then he tells this story about sheep and the goats and who's going to be blessed in the end. So, in that context, let me suggest three things real quick this morning that I think Jesus intends for us to hear. This is, one, a lesson about the final judgment. We too will have to give an account when the Master returns. Now, let's be honest. Very few of us in here have been entrusted with the kind of money we're talking about here in the parable. No one has come to me, at least, and said, here, Stephen, I want to give you just $1.5 million. Invest it. Do something good with it. Go for it. That's not what it's been. So therefore, in modern times, it's pretty common that we read, just like I did with the kids here, that we read this and we kind of use the pun for the word talent. You know, that it, in our culture, means also ability and skill, and that each one of us has been given these unique abilities and these unique skills. As the book of Genesis puts, we've been created in God's image, and then we've been given gifts of the Spirit to use for the building up of the kingdom. So, for some of us, we need to ask ourselves, we're going to have to give an account of what we've done with the things God's given us. How have we invested our gifts and our abilities? How have we invested our resources? How have we used those things that God has said, here, I'm giving this to you for my glory, for the building up of my kingdom. Use it. I mean, what are we doing with it? Have we been intentional about trying to discover what that gift is, and then once we have, using that? Or have we just kind of buried it away? I think that's one thing that the parable is telling us. But there's a second thing, and I think it's about more than just that. Because the third servant says to the master, I knew you were a hard man. I knew that you reaped where you did not sow. I knew that you gathered where you did not scatter seed, and so I was afraid. I was afraid. Well, I would say we need to pause for a minute before we start applying characteristics to God that suggests that, you know, this guy is necessarily God. Oh, well, God's reaping where he didn't sow. And it was like, well, wait a minute, hold on. That doesn't exactly fit. That's not the connection that I'm trying to make. I think there is something deeper than that that Jesus is trying to get across. One commentator, he wrote it this way. He said, the criteria with which God will make us make an accounting, then, is not the ability to attain a return on investment. It is in the ability to transform from a fearful orientation to one of trust, to move from terror to faith. Think about what's going on here. If we were saying, okay, what is this telling us about the kingdom? Well, this third servant says, I was terrified of you. Therefore, I did nothing with what you had given me because I was so afraid of losing it. And so we live now in a world where fear is often the primary motivator. It's how we try to get people to do what we want them to do, and sometimes even how people will bully others into submission. And the history of the church is really not all that much better, because if we look back over the way the church throughout the centuries, there are periods of time where persecution came at the hands of the church against those who didn't believe. There are times that we used fear to try to get people to get on board with what we were saying. And I think the parable is saying, hey, look, God's not like that. God's not like that. We've been entrusted with a different story. And we need to be moving from this kind of fear-based motivation to this faith-based motivation. From terror, oh my gosh, I can't do that because God's going to strike me down, to this, man, I love God, and God is so good. I just want to follow Him. I just want to do what He's saying because of love. Because God is not this loan shark in the sky looking for repayment with exorbitant interest. And God is not like payday lenders who say, hey, we'll cash your check for you. No problem. God is not running a scheme where He's going to, you know, give you a little loan here, but if you don't repay, I'm going to send my angelic thugs after you. No, it's not like that. It's this relationship of trust where God says, I delight in giving you good gifts so that you can use them, so that you can use them for my glory and for the building up of my kingdom, because I trust you and I love you and I want to share with you what is mine because you are my child, because I care for you. And so we then bring our talent back to the Lord, whether it's great, whether it's meager. We bring our talent to the table. Some of our talent's pristine and beautiful, and some of them are just like, that's the best I got. And God says, that's all right. It's tattered on the edges. It's fraying. That's okay. You bring it. I want you to use it. I gave it for your glory, because we bring it in trust, knowing that what God really wants from us is that relationship. I think that's part of the story of the parable, is that this third servant is like, I'm so fearful. I was terrified. I didn't want to do anything that might jeopardize. And He says, you missed the whole point. Because our judgment will be based, our ultimate judgment will be based not on our production, but on the relationship. Think about that. Our ultimate judgment is not on performance, because you and I, we can never be good enough. We could never come to God at the end and say, God, here's all the good stuff. Let me just lay out my resume for you. And here's, God would say, yeah, filthy rags. The best you got is never good enough. But the good news is judgment's not based on that. Judgment is based on the relationship that we have through my Son, Jesus Christ. So what have you done with the gifts I've given you? What have you done with the talents I've given you? Have you enjoyed them? Have you used them? Have you lived the full life, you know, in response to me, in loving relationship with me? Have you used them to try to build my kingdom? That's what I'm concerned about. And then the third thing that I think this parable says to me anyway, is that this parable challenges our love for safety and security. That many of us, we live very calculated lives. You know, Michelle and I have done this. We revisit this very frequently, not very frequently, but every once in a while, revisit the budget. You know, it's like, got to have a calculate. What are we bringing in? What is going out? Do we have, how can we separate stuff? And where can we save a little bit? And got to put away some for retirement, or maybe a little bit for a rainy day for savings. And, you know, we've invest modestly in some mutual funds, part of our retirement, you know, prepare for the future, that kind of thing. We live safe, most of us. Most of us don't do a lot of things that are really high risk, you know, It's like, unless you're Tammy, you know, it's like, I'm just going to go skydiving for my birthday, you know, that kind of thing. Most of us are like, I'm not getting near a parachute, you know. Maybe that's a silly example. But there's a lot of things that we don't do in life because they're really high risk. It's like, I'm not going to go invest all my life savings in, you know, the commodities market or in the futures market. That would just be dumb. You know, I'm not going to do that. The risk is too high. And so many of us, we do that with our life as we say, there are certain things that I'm not going to do because I value the future. See, the reality is, though, we often do that with faith, too. That we may have stepped out on faith at one point, taken a plunge, got dangerous at one point in our life, you know, said, God, I don't know how this is going to work out, but I'm going to step out and just trust that you're going to do it. But now we're like, well, but I got kids now and I got grandkids and I've got a house payment. I just can't do that. I've got job response. I just can't do that. I'm tired. I'm hurt. I'm old. I just can't do that now. You know, that was okay back then, but I just can't do that now. And so we get safe. And church becomes about coming on Sunday mornings and, you know, filling our time in the nursery and putting a few dollars in the plate and playing it safe. And I think that's one of the things that this parable challenges us. It says, whoa, 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 that's not what I gave you that for. I get the impression that if the third man had come to the master and said, man, I went all in. I tried. I invested it all, and the market tanked, and I lost it. I lost it. I get the impression that the master would not have been nearly so angry, because he said, you went for it. You went for it. You fell down. You blew it. But you went for it. Thank you for doing something, not just burying it. If he had just done something. So I wonder for us, what does that look like? What might that look like for us individually? What might that look like for you and your family? What might that look like for our church? Are we playing it safe? Are we taking chances? Are we living boldly? Are we taking risks? Because if we take risks, failure is definitely an option. If you step out there and you try something hard, failure is definitely an option. You may fall flat on your face. You may end up losing everything. You may end up filing for bankruptcy. You may end up being the laughingstock of the community. But the reality is, you don't build a race car so it can sit in your garage and look pretty. You build a race car so that you can take it out and drive it. You don't buy a guitar to hang it on the wall and say, oh, look at that, it's so pretty. I just want to sit around and watch it all day. No, you play it. You want to play the thing, you know? This is the point. You don't buy a couch so you can sit and look at it. You sit on it. So you can sit on the floor and look at it. That's what I meant to say. You don't buy a couch so you can sit on the floor and go, man, my couch is pretty. No, you buy the couch and sit on the couch. And ladies, you don't buy beautiful dresses just to decorate your closet, right? You want to wear them. So your spouses and other people need to take you out. That's what I'm saying. It's Valentine's weekend. We didn't start this church to be safe, is my point. To take risks, to live boldly, to get messy as we wade into the mess of people's lives. And we knew it wasn't going to be easy, but we knew we were called to it. And I'm wondering, have we gotten lulled to taking the safe road? Have we gotten so busy that we just don't have time to do something that's outside the box? Have we gotten so comfortable that we've turned this building or this way of doing church into an idol? Play it safe at your own peril, because God is not the God of the tame. God is not the God of the comfortable. God is not the God of the easy way. God is saying, come, join me in an adventure. Get off your butt. Get outside your walls. Get outside your box. Take a leap of faith. Take a risk. Live boldly. Invest in the kingdom. Because if your faith is nothing more than this little memento that you wrap up and place in your pocket, and every now and then you pull it out and go, man, that's so pretty. Love the fact that I have Jesus. Okay, Now I'm going to go back to everything else. We've missed the whole point. We've missed it. If we come Sunday after Sunday because the music's good and the conversation's pleasant and it's better than sitting at home by ourselves, we've missed the point. Because we gather here week in and week out because we share the conviction that we are meeting with the God of the universe. We are worshiping the God of the universe. We share this time together because we have the conviction that this has eternal significance. And we gather here because our lives have been radically changed by this message of Christ and this forgiveness that he offers. And we've just become almost addicted to that. It's like, I just want more, Jesus. I just want more, Jesus. Give me some more of that stuff. Just mainline it. I want it all the time. And I want to tell other people about it. And we gather here because we want to live boldly, so boldly that when we die and we stand before the Lord, God says, what have you done? What have you done with these talents I've given you? What have you done with this faith that I've given you? What have you done with this family that I've given you? What have you done with this church that I've given you? We say, God, here it is. I messed it up sometimes. I really fell flat on my face. But you know what, God? I lived. I took a risk, and I've lived boldly. We want to hear God say, well done. Well done, good and faithful servant. So to close, I'll close with the quote from Braveheart. All men die. Not all men truly live. That's the point. Not all men truly live. Are we willing to do that? Let's pray together. God, we thank you for this parable. We thank you for this reminder. This reminder to live boldly for you, to take a risk for you, to be willing to fail, to be willing to step out and try something so big that if you don't intervene and you don't empower us to do it, it's sure to fail. God, convict us when we've been lulled into the comfort of routine, when we've been lulled into the comfort of being safe and planning for the future. And we've forgotten to live boldly and radically for you. Forgive us. Remind us that there's deeper waters that you are calling us out to point our ships out to sea, Lord, to take a risk, to live boldly, to invest well. Give us the power to do so in Jesus' name. Amen.